WUAKR repeater. Is 8:29 p.m. at WUAKR repeater.
Good evening.
WUAKR repeater.
One minute to the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This is W2TTT. 1 minute to the net.
Good evening.
The time is 8:54 p.m. at WUAKR repeater.
Be advised, the club's or the repeater's clock is about 5 minutes slow. W2TTT.
W2TTTWI2W.
Good evening, sir.
Hi, Gordon. I'm not going to be participating in the net. I'm involved in preparations for the weekend. I'll be listening now.
Noted. Okay. Might want to let me know what. Maybe you want to jump in and just let us know what's going on with that. Would you mind at some point early in the net?
Good evening.
We don't have enough people to do the full-blown setup, so there's a few of us that are going to be bringing basically 100-watt class radios up and limited antennas, and it's kind of a last-minute throw-together thing, and we're doing it for fun. And with any luck, we'll have 5 bands, 6 meters, 220, 2 meters, 440, and 1.2.
Sounds delightful. Okay. What's the food arrangement?
With any luck, there'll be food.
Okay. So, like, NS2K can come up on Saturday and stuff like that?
Yeah, we're not going up Friday or Monday. We're just going to set up Saturday, tear down Sunday, and, it's a limited operation.
Understood. And so you can operate low power. That's a multi-op low power. That's very good. Alrighty. With that, is there any priority traffic or emergency traffic for the repeater before we begin the net?
Just a quickie question, K2ZO.
Hey, Jim?
Are you guys going to be picking up stuff down there on Friday? Do you need help? Or is it all going to happen on Saturday morning?
Come in. Jim, we're going to pick up a few items on Friday and just leave it in the vehicles, and then it'll be everybody will meet on the hill early on Saturday and take it from there.
Okay. All right, so then I can plan on just heading up there on Saturday when you're setting up?
Yeah, that's correct. We're shooting to start at about 9:30 up on the hill.
Okay, at this time, is there anything you need?
A lot of luck. I think we've got everything covered I can forward you my list that I've prepared so far.
Okay. Yeah, I saw some of it, and I saw some comment about power supplies. I mean, if somebody needs a power supply, I can drag one out here.
Yeah, I don't want to rain on the Nets parade, but as far as power is concerned, we're basically running band captains, and it's the responsibility of the band captain to let us know if they need power supplies. And I've left it at that. I'm waiting for responses on that. So I might give you a desperate call closer to the time if we need additional power supplies.
Okay, I have two 20-amp switchers and a 35-amp heavy and a 50-amp even heavier, which I don't think I'd want a 30.
Okay, KC2K, ISYD just to make it legal, and we'll hand it back to net control.
So why don't we start the net? It's kind of what I wanted to do at the beginning of the net, but okay. No big deal, we can continue if you'd like. All right, this is K2BAR, the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on the 14679 repeater owned by the Bergen County FM Association, which we encourage you to support, and also thank for the use of the repeater, both for tonight, also the regular Wednesday night net, which is also at 9 o'clock on this repeater, and the 443-100 net on Tuesday. We do not thank the Bergen County FM Association for the use of 10 meters on 28.350 at 9 p.m. on 10 meter upper sideband, but we do thank Jim K2ZO for his marvelous station and the control. Andrew runs the 440 net on Tuesdays, and Ben KF2IAB runs the net on Wednesdays. The technical net, we drop it. The technical net is an opportunity for you to bring your question about something that's puzzled you or something that you would like to learn more about. Even if we can't solve it here tonight, we will endeavor to do so in a future night, but it's a great time to bring your questions forward, no matter big nor small. There is no stupid question. We have a marvelous hobby of amateur radio, and there are many, many interesting facets of which none of us can become totally proficient. And there's always new expanding horizons that we can explore, and we can do a better job of it if we do it together. And that's the purpose of the technical net. So, if you have a question, we'd ask you to check in with your question, your call sign, your name, and if you have a question or not, you can say question, no question, or comment. So, at this point, I'd like to ask anyone with a K call to please log in. Please call K2BAR.
K2AMI, logging in. No questions, just listening.
Okay, Tony, I got you. K2AMI, very fine. Anybody else with a K call?
KC2ORX.
Good evening, Robert. Do you have a question? KC2ORX, K2BAR, do you have a question?
Yeah, Gordo, I do. For doing his field day coming up in about 3 weeks. What's the, maybe if Tony's still on the air, if he's still out there listening, could Tony email me to grid square we're in for parameters?
It's FM 20, Fox November 20, but stand by, let's get the rest of the chicken. You have a question, though, we'll get to that. Anybody else with a K call, please call K2BAR.
This is K2ZO.
Good evening, Jim. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. And it concerns our activity this coming weekend. One of the things we are doing is kind of curtailing heavy-duty effort with the big towers for a lower effort, not as high and won't be as much power. I know, of course, there'll be a difference with power, but what about the height? I mean, if you're on a 600-foot hill with a 6-meter antenna, does it really make that much difference going another 30 feet higher?
We can talk about that, too. That's a really good question. That's a really good question. Anybody else with a K-call, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. KC2LLW. Steve, no question.
Good evening, Steve. Welcome. Anybody else with a K-call? Okay, anybody with a W call, whiskey calls, ma'am. Okay, any other station wishing to check into the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net, please call K2BAR.
W2AKR, repeater.
NJ1W, Dave, no questions.
Good evening, Mr. Dave. Okay, anybody else with a with any call, please call K2BAR. Okay, well, we have two questions, and I'd like to first call KC2RX Robert and restate your question so we have it, and then let's just I think I already answered it, but we can explain a little bit more what your question is about, if you'd like. KC2RX, K2BAR.
W2MSK.
BAR. Stand by about 5 minutes. Inside. I'm inside the stop. You're picking up some milk. Stand by.
Okay, very good. We'll come back to your question. W2MSK, Mitch, good evening. Any questions?
I'm here to talk about the VHF contest.
It's a great thing. Okay, very fine. This net recognizes somewhat lurking WI2W, KC2KIS, K2AMI, KC2RX in the supermarket, K2ZO, KC2 Lima Lima Whiskey, NJ1W and W2MSK. Any other stations? Okay. Jim, would you repeat your question? And are you asking the tongue-in-cheek, or do you actually know the answer?
I'm asking to learn. I have gone to an ARRL presentation at the VARA meeting that was done by K1RX, and he had some very interesting curves showing the horizon, showing the distance, and showing the height, and showing the formulas that you need for line of sight. However, that was all very neat, but in practical world, how much difference does it really make? Especially if the band is open.
Okay.
What about height above the ground?
The long and short answer to the question is that I would say 99.9% of the time it's going to mean nothing. The only thing it would possibly do, especially since that's a bulb, I mean, it's essentially a bulb, my experience with it on 432, for instance, in September, where we still had foliage and it was not dry, indicated that we basically didn't even have enough foliage to provide attenuation at that frequency, so I don't see any issue at all with it. If you could stack a bunch of antennas vertically, then you would need to separate them. I'm sure if you could get some separation, if you will, diversity between your antennas, at any given time, you could pick one or the other or both to enhance
answer signal, but fundamentally, no, I don't think it's going to matter worth a darn at that frequency. That's my own opinion. There are people who believe, because they've spent a lot of money to reinforce their belief otherwise, but I don't think, especially at the 100-watt class, I don't think it's going to matter. At 1,500 watts, it might. At 800 watts, I'm not so sure. Oddly enough, Jim. That's my honest opinion. Over.
What about height above ground, WWK?
That was my question. We're up on a 600-foot hill. Is there a big difference between, say, a 20-foot high, which we can easily manage, or a 50-foot high tower, which is going to be a pain in the neck?
I think magically around 25 or 30 feet, it doesn't matter.
Come in.
Okay, come in.
Okay, Jim, and this is my opinion, once again, it gets down to, it depends. The height above the ground is the height from the bottom of the tower, not from the base of the hill. So height above ground, once you've hit 20 feet or whatever, well, at 6 meters, I guess it's even lower. But once you hit that level and clear all the foliage, a few feet difference, 20 feet or 30 feet difference above that, not going to make a hill of beans, because you either see them or you don't. And I don't see any need to go higher than just clearing the foliage. But once you've got additional towers around, you've got to clear those other towers so you're not shooting at them. So if you're using multiple towers, then you get another answer. So that's my 5 cents on the subject. KC2KIS, back to net.
Late chicken. Comment.
Peter, go ahead.
KC2QIM, checking in. Good evening.
KC2QIM, acknowledge. All right. Andrew, you want to pass this to Jim? Go ahead.
Comment. WTLSK.
Need to go?
The only thing I wanted to add was that if we're dealing with 6 meters and 6 meters only, where they're supposed to skip, then we're not talking about line of sight. And in that particular case, you probably do better with something that's going to aim either higher to accommodate the skip, or out to the horizon. So that's the only, and that probably a curse with 6 meters, or is an issue with 6 meters, possibly two. That's my only 2 cents.
I disagree. Can you make a comment? You know, it depends on the propagation mode that the signal you're receiving is using to get to you. In all honesty, you're going to find some cases where, let's say, you have a really long Yagi that's, you know, reasonably high off the ground. That unfortunately may not be the ideal answer if you're trying to receive stuff, let's say, off of meteors or off of aurora or other near field or relatively near field high angle of incidence propagation modes. If, on the other hand, you're trying to sit there and do double hop with no other forms of propagation enhancement, then you want to make sure you're clear of the ground. You're not too far. You're not too high, actually, because you want to get the extra gain off the ground. You want those ground reflections to help you. My honest opinion, though, is because of that site, the ground falls off fairly rapidly in every direction, at least 20 feet, you know, immediately in every direction, so except for perhaps the north. And so what's the issue? I mean, you're at 25 feet, you're in most directions the same as you would be at 55 feet.
Any other comments? Jim, I think if you had a choice, I would rather have two antennas, one pointed in one direction, one pointed to the other, one long boom, one short boom, you know, maybe a couple of elements or three elements in one antenna and like 11 on the other. That would be my, if I had a choice, I'd rather have that at 25 feet up in a place like that than I would having a 50-foot tower with anything on it.
Yeah, well, I disagree with the comment that Mitch had made before about working skip. If you're going to work e-skip on 6 meters, you don't need to be up high because of the angle at which it's coming in. However, if you're using a VHF, UHF, whatever, and depending on the line of sight, then it makes a difference. The higher you up, the further you can see to the horizon. But if the band is open and we operate, you know, and we're hearing e-skip comes in at an angle that would not make that much difference whether it were 25 feet or 50 feet.
Mitch, you want to make a comment?
Well, I my comment was directed towards line of sight. I agree with what Jim is saying as far as the skip is concerned. But if, in fact, there is skip, then the line of sight is a non-issue. That was my point.
Okay, then we agree.
Okay, let me just start the car. I'm actually running the Net Mobile, guys. By the way, do we have another check-in? Do we have another check-in? Yeah, KCQ-OAA is here, by the way. Anyway, here's one other thing to consider. Given that you're free of foliage and ground clutter and other miscellaneous things in the way, and you're on that 600-foot rock, I hate to tell you, but whether you're 30 feet up or 60 feet up, for the purposes of reaching that magical point on the horizon, means diddly-dong. It means absolutely diddly-dong. You know, as long as you're free of the ground clutter and foliage and things like that that would attenuate your signal, if you're 30 feet up or 60 feet up, it's just not going to make a whole lot of difference. 100 feet up? Oh, now we can start talking again. 150 feet up? Oh, we're definitely talking. But, you know, there's that magical space between 30 and 50 feet, let's say, where, you know, if you're clear of all the junk, you're beating your brains in for nothing.
Now let's talk about amplifiers.
One additional comment. Go ahead, Mitch. And I can, those who know more about this can correct me or not. In the case of skip, 6 meters we're talking primarily, then one could argue that you're better off with a vertical antenna to get out to the horizon as opposed to a directional Yagi. So it may even be more advantageous to have a vertical.
No, because if the other guy's horizontal, you want to be horizontal. Although it doesn't make that, it sometimes doesn't make that much difference, but I'm speaking from my experience on 10 meters.
I would agree with you. It does make a modest difference. And it's really about the antenna gain, and if you're close enough such that you're not, it's not rotating in polarization as it's propagated, you know, between the transmitter and the receiver, then you're really just wasting your time with undue attenuation. I wouldn't use a vertical. I think there are other ways to get gain other than, you know, gain at the horizon. Let's talk about effective gain. Where do you want the RF to squirt? I know there was a point in my life where I needed to operate Aurora and Meteor Scatter, and I just tilted my antennas up 25 degrees and left them there, and that was fine. It wasn't great for, they're horizontal, but they
they, what do they call it, were of limited, what do they call it, were of limited elevation. They were just, they were okay. And in the near field, working people locally, it was a bit of a problem. Any other comments before we go on to Jim's amplifier?
Once again, it gets down to, it depends. The situation, what are you trying to achieve, means a lot. For this weekend, as long as we're above the trees, it doesn't mean much.
Okay. Any other comments?
What are we doing for a 6 meter amplifier, if anything?
That is, if we are running an amplifier with approximately kilowatt out, and then we add 14 dB antenna gain, and we have it at human being level, don't you think we've exceeded our viability safety factor? Shouldn't the beam of the antenna be well above the surrounding people?
It will be.
So we're crossing a couple of subjects here. What band are we talking about first? I'm sorry, was it 6 or 2?
Any of the bands, even on low bands, there's a consideration of bar of power into the human body.
Okay, what I would say is 25, 30 feet above you and physically removed from you. I mean, you know, the if you notice our food area is to the north, if we position our antennas to the south of the operating position, I think in general you will minimize your ARF exposure. That would be my own suggestion, that put the operating station and the food area to the north of wherever you site the antenna in this minimalistic approach. That will also help you maximize the height, because if you're going for shorter antennas, you're going to want to put the one or two towers that you do have along that bump where my vehicle was last time, and then maybe move the tent a little further to the north along that bump heading toward where the food was last time.
Good evening.
Okay, but my comment is that placing the antenna 10 feet above the mountaintop and being just above the height of a 6 foot person, I don't think that's a safe position to be in. Actually, at any power level.
No, I agree. What I'm saying, though, is I'm assuming you're going to have things about 20 to 30 feet in the air, and that should be more than sufficient if your operating position is generally to the north, because you're rarely going to point to the north. You're not going to talk endlessly to the north. You might talk to the northeast, you might talk to the northwest, but, you know, in general, I think you'll be fine. I mean, I'm not twitching yet.
I agree. I'm not either.
Jim, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, when you start sweating, and you know it's not the sun, that's when then you start running QRP. There is, the way ARRL website, by the way, a program to do the calculation.
Yeah, if you just Google RF exposure calculator, you'll find it. Perhaps if someone's in front of a computer, they could go look at that. Okay. I'm going to tell you a quick story, and I don't know if you want to continue the RF exposure conversation, but here's the God's honest truth. Back in the 70s, in the days of VE3 ASO and VE2 DFO and a couple of the other big gun contest operations, the Canadian rules at the time, anyway, were 2,500 watt output. That was that they didn't have a 1,000 watt plate current, plate power input thingy like we had back in our old regulations. So what they did was they I don't think about that way. We're going to find out anyway. What they did was they ran 2,500 watts out. And by the way, that was into the antenna feed point. That was what the Canadian rules were at the time. I don't know if they are now. And so, there were guys, you know, operating 2-meter amplifiers, you know, big amplifiers, and the antennas would only be 20 feet in the air. And in certain directions, they were pointed back through the ham shack for long periods of time. And the guys used to complain of headaches. So that, Jim, it's kind of analogous to your sweat story. If they started to get headaches, they knew that they had to turn the antenna somewhere else.
What about the guys with the pacemakers?
They didn't operate VE3 ASO.
Are there any general questions about the VHF content that have gone unanswered?
So what was that?
As long as we're all gathered, are there any general questions about the upcoming VHF contest that have gone unanswered?
I want to discuss grid squares, Gordon, in the local area here.
Tony, please expound.
Okay, well, I don't know the exact delineation to the north and to the west here, but all around our area here, and our area being from Westwood South and from Burgerfield Dumont West, it's called FN20. Now, if you actually go to your call sign on URZ.org, I guess, URZ.net, and go for your extra information, which comes up, you can find the grid square that you're in. Now, here in Riverbridge, I'm in FN20XW. There's two other letters. They're not often asked, except somebody who's a distance away and would like to zero his antenna. He has an appropriate program that he can zero the antenna on your location exactly. So grid squares around this area are FN20. If you get east of us here, and that's kind of into, I think even Demarest, some sections of Burgerfield, Dumont area there, is FN30. And that FN30 continues further east into New York, New York State, you know, like Yonkers, lower New York State in that direction. Now above our area here in FN20 is FN21. Dick, KTCB up in Hillsdale, and further up into New York State, FN21, and going to the right, where our contest station will be, I believe that's FN31 up there. So try to visualize that we are very close to the center of four grid squares, which will occur someplace in Rivervale. And again, the current barrel bulletin shows the grid square junction. If you look at the picture in the current barrel bulletin, it'll show exactly where all the grid squares come together. But again, you can locate your own personal grid square by going to qrz.com. qrz.com, I got it that time. It came out automatically. And you can find your personal grid square, and you should know that. Do I have the information correct there, Gordon?
Yeah,
Yeah, Tony, you do. If you pick up this town of Rivervale, northeast is 31, southeast is 30, southwest is 20, and northwest is 21. That's probably the easiest way to do it. You can work a station in each of the grids. You work the same station from, if they're operating different grids or if you're operating different grids. And of course, you can work them on multiple bands. You cannot work them on multiple modes. It doesn't matter what mode you work them, the point value is the same. For scoring purposes, one point is given for 6 meter and 2 meter contacts, 2 points for 222 and 432 or 446, if you will. And I don't remember what it is for 903 and 1296, but I want to say it's 3, but it may be 4. In any case, you sum up all your grids from the different bands. So if you work FN20 on both 6 and 2, that's 2 grids. And you multiply the number of grids times the number of QSO points, not the QSOs, the QSO points. So your 2 points from 440 and your 220 and your 1 pointers from 6 and 2. You sum all those up, multiply them times the number of grid, you know, total grids you have across your bands, and away you go. Questions?
KC2QIM, good evening, Boyd, Peter. I happen to be grid square FN30AW. Are all the grid squares delineated by the alpha equally in the same size, the same configuration?
Fair question. In Northern Europe, where this system became first popularized, the grids are virtually square. They're not quite, obviously. They are 1 degree high by 2 degrees wide. 2 degrees wide, if I remember right. You're 1 degree high and 2 degrees wide. And so FN20, which starts right here, as Tony elaborated, through Bergerville and Dumont and down into Manhattan. It actually cuts Manhattan in pieces. People on the lower west side, by the way, are in FN20, and people on the east side are in FN30, which is kind of funny. But people on the upper west side are FN30 as well. Anyway, that goes all the way out to a point west of Allentown. FN10 starts in a point west of Allentown, just to put it in perspective for you.
Yeah, I mean, it follows the longitudinal line from north to south, and obviously, I'm looking at the map now, the grid map now, and I can see where the line basically changes by angle.
That's correct. 7441 is the intersection in Rivervale where the four grids have a corner.
QSL. I came a little late into the QSO, and I apologize. I was actually working 18 meters, and I'm so excited. I was talking to guys in Madeira Island on my little radio here, so I was just really pumped up. I had a question about coils. If you're going to change the subject.
Well, let's finish up the subject at hand, but we can do that. No problem. Any other questions about this weekend's VHF contest?
Yeah, comment from KC2KIS.
Go ahead, throw in the times.
I beg your pardon?
Add the times to your discussion.
I'm not too sure what you mean by that, but it's now 9:37. The RF calculations are just random through the RF calculator at the average power of 50 watts, which is pretty much what I'm guessing we'll be putting out with the quote-unquote 100 watt transmitters at the average power at the antenna. At 15 feet away from the antennas, we are within limits on all bands. And so I think from an RF exposure point of view, we're safe.
I would argue that you'd be pretty hard-pressed to have that level of exposure. So I think you're well within margins.
Okay, that's assuming the calculator works well, or actually works. Anyway, KC2KIS, back to net.
Okay, anything else about the VHF contest?
Yeah, I had a question. Is it on?
Of course. They're going up Saturday morning, however.
Okay, I'm probably still able to help out. Where is it?
Tony?
Okay, it's in a place called Carlson Mountain, also referred to as the old Nike base, in Orangeburg or Orangetown, New York. I did send out directions to the location. However, in some cases, I don't have everybody's email, particularly newer members. If you didn't get the directions to the location, would you please email me and request them? And I'm k2amiaro.net, and I'll return a copy of the directions. But basically, if you get on Knickerbocker Road from where you are, and you're close to Knickerbocker Road, I think, go north, and you get on Route 303, because Knickerbocker Road eventually becomes 303 when it goes over the state line. And as you pass the new Lowe's store up in New York State, look to the right, within a mile, as I recall, and look for a street that says Spruce Street, like the tree, Spruce Street. And you make a right turn there and head up the hill. If you know where the Orangetown Public Works Department is, or if you remember that it used to be an old National Guard unit up in Orangetown with military barracks off of 303, you're getting close to the turnoff at that point. You got that, Peter?
Yeah, QSL, Tony. Took a buck all the way up 303 to New York State, past the Lowe's, which I know where it is, and make a right on Spruce Street, on the street, just keep on staying straight up the street.
Comment.
W2AKR, repeater.
As Spruce Street becomes Carlson Mountain Road, and you continue climbing the hill till you get to the first four-way stop intersection, it's pretty near the top of the hill. And it's a good mile plus up the hill. At that four-way intersection, you make a right turn. You get on a street called Tweed Boulevard. And Tweed Boulevard, when you get on it, you'll be overlooking the Hudson River. So don't make a left turn, but continue south on Tweed Boulevard. You see Nike Park, and at Nike Park, at the sign that says Nike Park, you'll say Nike Lane. Once again, you make a right turn on Nike Lane and go to the top of the hill through a couple of wire-type gates and around the water tank, but keep working your way to the top of the hill. Let me see the road back to Peter, and then we'll give it to Dave.
QSL, Tony, thank you very much. That's that. On your comeback, you basically say when you're not going to show up. QYM, back to Dave.
Comment.
Just wanted to make the comment that there is a map with the directions on the Barrow website. You go to the Barrow website, click on links. There's a link to the VHF, UHF, Nike contest site. So it's got a good map on it. And I just wanted to finalize with Andrew if he needs me to help at picking up stuff at the garage tomorrow morning, and at what time, and I need directions to the garage, unless you want to handle that after the net's over. This is NJ1W, back to net.
Let me see if I've got it. Okay, NJ1W, we'd like to have you there tomorrow between 12, between 10 and 12 at the garage. if you can give me a call or I can give you a call, we can discuss the address. We don't give that over the air. Back to net.
This is NJ1W. Okay, Andrew, I'll have to get your number somehow. Or if you want to just email it to me, it's up to you. Or I'll email my number to you. Either way, this is NJ1W back to net control.
Comment.
Okay, comment.
This is W2MSK, just to confuse things. The way I usually go, just to make it possibly easier, is I go up 9W. When you go over the Spark Hill bridge, right, in Spark Hill, New York, bridge that goes over that chasm there, about a quarter of a mile further, you make a left on Route 5, that's Tweed Boulevard. You go up 9W, over the Spark Hill bridge, about a quarter of a mile, first, you'll see a Route 5 left, make a left, that's Tweed Boulevard. Back to that.
And then you would make a left onto Nike Road.
That's correct. I think I'll be wearing my battle dress for some more.
Hua. For those of you who don't know, that's heard, understood, acknowledged. Okay, well, any other comments about the VHF contest before I fill in one gap and take Peter's question?
One more question. Andrew, have you gotten contact with Phil yet?
Negative. I have not been able to get hold of him, so hence working on alternatives. I might speak to Tony regarding transportation if it gets down to that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, just as a last but not least, the contest starts at 2 p.m. on Saturday. That means you start calling CQ at 2 p.m. Please record the call sign of the station you worked and their grid square. You do not need a signal report. If you please, and roving, it is very important that you get in, endeavor to do so. I have to be around home, so I will be home. I think Steve mentioned that people will be listening on 7-9, but just as an FYI, you cannot use 5-2 for the contest, but you can use other national simplex frequencies, so 223.5, 446.0, 52525 are all free for contest use, no problem. We'll also use other simplex frequencies on 2 meters in particular, but you cannot use 146.52. That is verboten, along with repeater inputs and outputs, but if you happen to find somebody on a repeater and you want to get their attention, that's fine. But make sure that if you're roving that you're in at least two other logs somewhere during your adventure from some grid or another. That's critically important. The logs are electronically checked. Also, if you do have a log, submit it to the AWRL, and if you're on the house, submit it to Phil, and he will get it in, that's WHLXC, so that our logs can be accumulated for a club score, not just the club station, but the club score, so I think that's important as well. Okay, any other comments before we go on to coils? I think we've beaten it to death. Good, gentlemen. I hope we have a successful weekend, and albeit at the 100-watt level, that's still outstanding. Peter, KC2QIM, this is K2BAR. What is your question about coils?
Okay, first, I'm not going to qualify myself as a tremendously technically astute individual. I'm just learning like the ropes. Certainly, I don't have the academic background, but I am
someone can copy him on the input. Became marginal, and you actually dropped out of the repeater a few times. We got that you weren't technical, but which is a lie. But that's very thoughtful of you. It's very modest. In any case, what's this? Can you improve your signal so we can get a question?
Yeah, can you get a little bit more? I got part of your question, but I'm still having trouble. I think I know the answer, though.
You still copying me? Over.
Better.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is I have a 19-wine coil, a 3/4-inch diameter, and I plugged it into the back of the tuner, and I got my SWR down very nicely to 1.1:1. But what's the rule of thumb in using a coil with a tuner? Is it a larger coil, more wines, etc.? Over.
Jim, it's all yours.
Okay, dear. What you did was compensate for the fact that the tuner would not match that antenna with the components that were in it. So what you did is you added something so that you changed the impedance that the antenna tuner sees. So you just fooled it. There's another way of doing that, and that is change the length of the coax. Now, the length of the coax on 10 meters that you were trying to do is it doesn't take much, because a quarter wavelength of coax will change the impedance drastically if there's any SWR on it. So you might try the same experiment by putting a piece of coax from the back of the output of your tuner over to the feed line and seeing if that will allow it to tune.
But in my case, Jim, all I have is a coax connection into the L tuner, and then normally I plug the end of my antenna into the tuner. There's no feed line to the antenna. It's a straight into.
Okay, so what you're doing is you're just running a long wire right off the end of the tuner on 10 meters. Is that right?
I'm sorry, I came back. I lost my battery. I'm back now. You still copy?
Yeah, so you're using a long wire on 10 meters? Not a good idea.
Yeah, well, that's my only antenna. It's a 102-foot wire, and I use it on all bands, using the tuner to compensate for the SWR.
Good evening.
Well, you can get around that problem by changing the length of the antenna wire, which is exactly what you're doing with the coil, so that's fine. What I thought you were doing was putting the coil in series with a coax feed. But basically what's happening is that you are changing the impedance that you're looking at by using the coil and getting it to a point where the antenna tuner will do it. I still say that on 10 meters, that type of configuration is going to lead with lots of RF. And no doubt you'll probably run into that problem.
Yeah, I'm getting little bites from place to place, but that's also because I don't have a real proper ground at the moment. I have a wire that leads to a pipe in my heating system, which is basically, I don't have any cold water pipes in my, my shack is up on the third floor. I get little bites from time to time.
I have a suggestion that you don't run the wire. You're running that wire into your shack?
I have the L circuit tuner on the top of the window frame, with only about 1 foot of wire in the shack inside the window, and it's about maybe 5 feet from me when I'm on the air.
Okay, and you're just using an L network, that's all, two components in your tunic.
Correct, just an L circuit, a little MFJ 16101.
Okay, so what you did by adding that additional coil was change it to a T-type tuner because you have an L, a capacitor, and then another inductor. And if you look at the handbook, you'll see that that type of tuner will tune a much wider range. So basically, you've accomplished what you're going to do. My suggestion would be to use an antenna tuner like a T-type with a coax, go the coax out the window, even if only a short length, ground the shield, and put the antenna to the center conductor. That will cool things off quite a bit.
Jim, thank you very much. That's a very good suggestion. That's a very good suggestion. I'm just getting started in this, so I figure that's a good project to go for before the fall hits us. All right, that was it. I want to thank you very much. I wasn't sure exactly which coil works better than the other one, but experimenting with this coil seems to have given me some better results. Thank you a lot, Jim. This is KC2QYM. I'll be listening.
Yeah, the way to find out how much effective it is to use an RF ammeter in series with the antenna and tune for max.
Okay, under advisement. Thanks so much.
If you don't have an RF antenna, meter, stick a light bulb in series with the antenna and tune and watch what happens. Be interesting.
Yeah, it's another way to get some light in the room. I understand that. Okay, thank you very much. Back to Ned.
Okey-doke. Well, that was good. That was, so you added inductance. That's the key point to your wire antenna. You added inductance, and you changed the length of the antenna. That's basically what the coil did. Very nice. All right, any other questions, comments, confusions for the net before we close?
Case 2, can I ask for the brag?
Oh, please brag.
I got another QSL card. I'm working on DXCC very slowly, and I got one from one of those red DX entities. I got it from Italy today.
Well, that's wonderful, Andrew. That's wonderful. Keep in mind, after September, you're going to have to start again.
Yeah, but the good thing about this is my sister collects stamps, so and I collect QSL cards, so we can work together on this. KC2KIS, back to net.
You going to get her to put Australian postage on things?
I'll put any postage on whichever country I'm in at the time. Yeah, I guess I'll have to start using all my postage stamps before I leave the country.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, one other thought. Since I know we have Echolink on the 443-100 machine, there's absolutely no reason why you can't consider you can't continue to. Be the net control for the 443-100 net. Was that John the other way? Yeah. What do you call it? I just saw my son go the other direction. But anyway, there's no reason why you couldn't net control from Australia. Wouldn't that be a kick?
Actually, it's IRLP on that repeater, which would require a radio connection at the other end, which would make life a little difficult. But my goal is within 8 weeks of being there to try and get my ticket, and perhaps what I can be net controlled with a VK3 call.
That would even be more cool. Alrighty. Well, gentlemen, it is all gentlemen tonight. I want to thank you for your lively conversation. I wish everybody good luck in the VHF contest this weekend. I'm going to be around home and operating a bit. 6 and 2 are up. The 222 and 432 antennas are also up. 432 works. 222, I have not tried the station yet, but that's my next task.
in my abundant spare time, hi. And I look forward to working you as well. So look for K2BAR, look for various rover stations on Simplex, and of course, look for any footy specific station at home, including mine. And last but not least, feel free to coordinate, make skeds, whatever, via email or by getting up on 7-9. On this note, or on that note, I will again thank you all for a lively net. And this is K2BAR securing and returning the repeater to normal amateur use. Thank you to the Bergen County FM Association for the use of their repeater once again.
73 Gordon, and thank you very much, Jim. KC2QIM clear. See you on the weekend.